Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And I'm going to tell you a little story. There was several years back now that I did not get around to getting my flu shot. And I kept putting it off as too busy. Well, then I got the flu. And I have not been, I can't remember being more miserable. And it is the last time I have ever avoided getting my flu shot. And I hope you're kind of like me and get your flu shot every year. We're going to talk about flu shots with Dr. James Conway. He teaches at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the Pediatrics Division. His area of practice involves infectious diseases in children. Always great to have him come by and talk with us. And Dr. Conway, thank you for taking time to visit with us again. I really appreciate it.
Great to be back with you, Larry. Good to talk to you.
And just for our listeners, do you get your annual flu shot? Why or why not? Have you had the flu? How severe was it? It's miserable, I can tell you that, at least from my experience. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Have you ever had the flu, Dr. Conway?
I have, unfortunately, Larry. I did have one year that I similarly fell victim to the scheduling snafus like you did and was thinking that it was a mild season. And lo and behold, ended up with the flu myself, and it's not something I ever want to go through again.
Yeah. You know, we hear the phrase the flu a lot. What does it mean, and maybe what does it not mean?
Well, it's a good question, because I think we've all had this concept drummed into us by grandmother about stomach flu, and that's certainly, you know, sort of a common euphemism. But influenza is really a respiratory virus. It's transmitted very readily. It's highly contagious from person to person, and usually starts as an upper respiratory tract infection, which then disseminates. A lot of chemicals called chemokines get released that give you the just most awful feeling of this achiness, severe headache, pretty high fevers in some people, and then in some unfortunate folks, can really progress into a lower respiratory tract disease where it actually causes true pneumonia. And those are the ones that really end up being much more complicated and can really lead to a lot of problems, and unfortunately in some cases, including death.
What do we know about this year's strains?
Well, this year's strains, at least in the vaccine, are the same as last year. Every year, the WHO and CDC have to sit down and look at what's been circulating in the other hemisphere and look at what's circulated over the course of the winter down there and basically make a guess about what's likely to circulate here. And this year's predictions were that things that were going to circulate were going to be fairly similar to what we had last year. So the vaccine this year is actually essentially identical to what we had last year. Now, with that said, people that got it last year can't rest on that as being confident that immunity will transfer over and protect them this year. So people who were immunized last year still do need to get it. We do already have some flu showing up here and there around the Wisconsin region, and so there have been positive test cases already with both influenza A and B both being reported. So it's out there, it's ready to go, and fortunately vaccine is now also starting to show up and ready to go as well.
Are there certain people who are always at high risk for the flu?
Yeah, there's always going to be a couple different groups. One group is going to be those who are just at high risk for actually coming into contact with people with the flu. So obviously health workers who spend a lot of their time around sick people are at very high risk and obviously are a very, very high priority group that we feel like should be immunized. Certainly kids, because they're in close contact with one another, and you know, we do try to teach them to work and play well and share. Unfortunately, they share a lot of secretions. And so kids are really at high risk, and therefore families with kids are at high risk because their kids are going to be likely to bring those diseases home into the home. The other group, then, is the group that are at very high risk for complicated disease, and those are largely people in the elderly population, people that smoke or have asthma, and then anybody who has any kind of immune deficiency or immunologic problem really is much, much at higher risk of complications. And then the other group to always keep in mind is the pregnant women. And as we learned the hard way during that influenza A H1N1 outbreak some years ago, pregnant women in particular can get very severe disease, which can really not only affect their own health, but obviously the wellness of their unborn baby.
Wow. Nick in Green Bay has a comment. Hi, Nick. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Kind of a question, I guess. I used to get the flu shot religiously, but every year I get the flu shot, I get sick to my stomach and you just get really nauseated and a fever. So finally last year I like had a fever of 103 after I got it, and I call my doctor. He's like, well, if you get to 104, go to the ER. So now I just don't get it, and I haven't been really sick or anything. So, but what would be in there to make me sick? Because I'm really touchy with things. I mean,
yeah, okay.
Good question, Nick. So there's two things that we sometimes have to wrestle with these kinds of questions. One is the coincidental, unrelated association. So unfortunately, people do get illnesses periodically, and so there is sometimes just that coincidental, I happen to have some kind of illness that coincides with the timing of when I got my vaccine. The other is that you have to think about really what the idea of a vaccine is, and that is actually to turn on parts of the immune system so that the immune system essentially mimics the response it would have if you were actually in the process of dealing with the wild-type infection. So part of what you're trying to do is you stimulate the immune system to develop immunity that then is going to protect you throughout the season is sometimes that you're going to get some of those small signals in that chemical cascade of an inflammation-type reaction. And so that's why, you know, people do it in various ways, sometimes have more pain and swelling at the site of an injection. And some people do get kind of a mild achiness and a little bit of fever. So we do recommend, especially for people like you who have sort of figured out on your own that you know your body well enough to know that this does seem to happen reliably, to be liberal with acetaminophen or ibuprofen and, you know, sort of essentially tamp down those symptoms the same way you would if you actually had the real deal. Obviously, that would be a much worse version of it. So it's certainly a real phenomenon. I don't think we should discount the fact that some people do have a little discomfort and may feel a little illness sensation after they get the vaccine, but it really is worth the trouble when you compare it to what the real deal disease would be if you weren't protected by the vaccine.
I've had it on occasion, but it usually doesn't last very long.
It does seem to be kind of idiosyncratic. Some years the strains that are in the vaccine are a little bit more immunogenic, a little bit more stimulatory to the immune system than others. So it's different for different people. There are people that, like Nick, you know, do seem to have it fairly reliably. They have a little bit more robust immune reaction to it. And it is just one of those things that, you know, you're better off trying to manage it rather than to avoid the vaccine entirely.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate the call. I want to give Alice and Racine a chance to join us. Alice, hi.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
In the mid or early 50s, I lived in an enclosed community with 40 women. I think 35 of them had the flu. I did not. In the mid-70s, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, and the doctor recommended that I get the flu shot, which is the only flu shot I've ever had in my life. Question, I'm now 81. Is it possible that I could be immune?
It's a good question. So there, you know, there's so many different strains of flu that show up periodically, and there is occasionally some cross protection from past experiences with influenza. So when the H1N1 outbreak happened, you know, the people that suffered the most were young adults, and the thought was that there probably had been previous flu strains that older individuals had experienced previously that might have given them a little bit of immunity. And so there is some protective immunity that carries over when people have had the flu in the past. There's certainly some protective immunity when you've had the vaccine in the past. But it would really almost be impossible for somebody to have persistent immunity from having had a vaccine in the distant past or even disease in the distant past, just because it's such an interesting virus. It's a group of viruses. There's A, B, and C types. They have sub-strains, and so when you look at the strains that we talk about, you'll see these H's and N's that describe different pieces of the virus, and those change constantly. And these viruses, I mean, the reason we have to change the vaccine every year and the reason we often do end up with multiple different strains is because these things are constantly mutating, and so they go through what we call drifting and shifting of their genetics. And the reason there isn't one vaccine that can hold all of these things or can be given just as a one-time injection is because the viruses are constantly changing. So the odds that anybody would be persistently resistant to the flu is pretty low. Now, there are some people that are just ultra careful as far as their hand hygiene and avoiding ill contacts and those kinds of things, who can avoid the flu. And there's certainly every reason to believe that should be part of your routine along with getting the flu vaccine. But I don't think that there's much evidence that long-standing flu immunity really exists.
There we go. Thank you, Alice, for calling. I appreciate it. I want to give Jim in Waukesha a chance to join us. And then you can join in, too. Some open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And Jim in Waukesha, thanks again for calling.
Sure. Good morning.
Morning.
This kind of piggybacks on the previous call. I'm a 66-year-old retired public high school teacher, so I've been in contact with, you know, lots of people.
Yeah.
And to the best of my knowledge, I can't remember ever having the flu or ever having the flu shot. So am I being very, very lucky? Should I get one this year because I'm, you know, not getting any younger? What do you think?
Actually, really interesting thought and really interesting question. So, you know, there are certainly people that are a little extra careful, and having grown up in a family of school teachers, I know that my parents were always extremely careful because they knew that the kids were the biggest source of disease in the world, and in fact also were able to avoid illness pretty regularly by really careful hand washing. You may also have benefited by a population where people were actually pretty good about immunizing their kids, and maybe even were respectful and kind enough to keep their sick kids home and not have heavy exposure. You also may be, you know, a particularly healthy person and have a pretty good immune response, and so that there are people who can get sort of milder versions of flu where they don't really recognize it as full-blown body aches, bad headache, high fever stuff, the way some people do with the flu. So you may have been a beneficiary of any number of things, or you may just be really lucky, in which case, you know, you should run out and buy a lottery ticket immediately. But I do want to make sure that everybody's aware that, you know, after the age of 65, as you so gently put it, you know, you're not getting any younger. And the problem is that as people advance in age or in those other risk groups, if and when you did get the flu, the problem is that predictably the outcome might not be so pretty. And your risk of having complicated flu is really much higher once you kind of flip past that 65-year age group. So, you know, I certainly would, if I was in your shoes, suggest to you that this is a great time. You've, you know, kind of ridden the wave of luck for a long time, and now it may be time to kind of take a step into being a little bit more proactive about protecting yourself.
There you go, Jim.
Okay. All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Dr. James Conway, teaches at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the Pediatrics Division, talking with him today about flu shots and getting your flu shot. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hope you'll stay tuned, because at 11:45 today, we're going to talk about how doctors and other healthcare providers can help us navigate end-of-life issues. Right now, though, we're talking with Dr. Jim Conway about the importance of getting your annual flu shot. And let's call us online. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Mark in Lake Geneva next. Mark, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Great. My question is, last year I got a flu shot for the first time. I'm 60 years old. I kept hearing, all the warnings that I should do it, and I just decided to, you know, to go ahead and try it. I got the shot. Within about half an hour, I started feeling, you know, pretty poorly. A lot of heartburn, which I found out was a histamine reaction. I got home within about an hour and called my wife, and she decided to call a doctor for me because I really wasn't talking very well. My tongue was swelling up, and
oh my goodness.
I was advised to go to the emergency room, call an ambulance, which I didn't do. I just waited for my wife to get home. But I wound up in the emergency room, wound up getting a couple medications, for the reaction, and, an $800 bill later, I'm not too excited about getting another flu shot.
Oh, boy.
Well, Mark, it sounds like quite a story, and I sympathize with you, because those are certainly the rare but unfortunate things that occasionally can happen. Allergic reactions, I think, are one of the rare but recognized realities of any kind of biological product, whether they're medications or vaccines. And you did exactly the right thing by recognizing that there was something amiss, and were a little brave maybe to wait out the ride to the hospital, but I'm glad it all turned out well for you. Allergic reactions are one of those rare side effects, and there are very clear protocols that practices that give vaccines use to make sure that they actually monitor for those kinds of things. Most practices encourage people to stay around for at least 15 minutes after vaccine and making sure that there at least isn't a very acute event. But people should be aware, and that's certainly something that's the reality of these kinds of things, that occasionally allergic reactions can occur. And I think that you've actually told a sort of worst-case scenario version with a best-case outcome, obviously, of how those things can go. So those are the things that people actually should be aware of, that if they get itching and rash things, that may be one of the early signs. But as soon as there's any sensation of scratchiness or swelling of the tongue and throat or any airway things, those need to be immediately addressed. Most of the time, those do occur rather quickly in what we call a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction. And, you know, you should be then very cautious. There are, you know, there's multiple different things in the vaccines that are there to stabilize the product and to keep it clean. So there are some antibiotics in there, and obviously some of the vaccines are produced in eggs. So there are people that have rare but severe egg allergies that need to avoid certain vaccines. The good news is that as we recognize this, there's more and more products that are actually specifically designed to deal with people that have had those kinds of allergies. And so there now are some recombinant vaccines that actually don't involve eggs or anything like those. So, you know, depending on what your risk factors are, you know, I think you should make sure that you're absolutely careful, as I mentioned earlier, about sort of careful hand hygiene and avoiding ill people and all those kinds of things. But you may want to consider actually seeing an actual allergist and try to figure out which component of the vaccine it might have been that you reacted to, because it would be important to know whether it was one of the antibiotics that was in there or potentially the eggs or something like that as you move forward, just for sort of important knowledge in general.
Yeah, it'd probably be well worth it, I would think. Mark, thank you. Appreciate your call. And Bob in Franklin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, thanks. Last year I talked to my doctor at Aurora, and she didn't really recommend getting the shot, so I did not get it. Is there some controversy over whether it's good or bad? Or
I'd be a little puzzled why a medical provider wouldn't be strongly endorsing this as a routine practice. Did she give you any reason? did she give you any reason why she thought you in particular weren't a good candidate for the vaccine?
It really didn't say anything. It said that it doesn't matter. She said it doesn't matter. It's up to you. You know.
I mean, there are some people, I think, even in the medical field that are a little bit more passive about some of the preventive health measures. I think that, you know, we do have a mindset in much of the American medical system that we're much about treating things. And so I think there are people that haven't really endorsed or wrapped their brains around this idea that we need to do everything possible to prevent illness rather than dealing with both the unfortunate discomfort and the expense of treating things. And I think people have in some ways been lulled over the last couple of years because we've had some milder flu seasons, and we do have antiviral medications to treat the flu for people that get the flu. But I think that we've all recognized over time that prevention is really where it's at. You know, our programs have really expanded over the last 10 years. We were very aggressive about immunizing the high-risk populations, the immune-deficient people and the elderly, and then we moved into more routine immunization in children, mostly because they just had such frequency of infection and they would spread it so readily. But then gradually over time, we've realized that there's more and more populations that can benefit from the vaccine. And so a few years ago, after looking at the risks and benefits of all this, I think all the major organizations really came down on the fact that essentially all Americans should be offered and really should strongly consider protecting themselves and their families against the flu by getting immunized. The other thing I think that's really important for everybody to realize is there's lots of different products out there that are specifically designed to try to make things easier, but also to provide the best protection possible. So we've got, you know, nasal flu mist vaccines that don't require a needle, and those are, it turns out, probably more efficacious, more useful, and more protective in young kids than the injectable vaccines. We've got higher potency vaccines for the elderly population who with all due respect to those folks out there, their immune systems aren't quite as rigorous and robust as they were when they were younger. And so to try to give it a little bit more of a jump start in being protected, there are vaccines now that have a little bit higher potency to try to help those people be better protected. So, you know, I'm a little surprised, a little disappointed that there's healthcare providers out there that are still a little ambivalent about it. And so that's why I think these kinds of shows and educating yourselves is really important, because I think people do need to take ownership of their own health and be proactive about trying to do everything they can to be preventive. So
yeah.
You know, I encourage people to go back to their providers and say, hey, I want this. This is important to me because I want to protect myself and my family.
Bob, thanks again for calling. I want to give John in Green Bay a chance to join us. John, hello.
Well, good morning, and thank you. Basically, two questions. One, what is the ramp-up time from the time one is injected until the vaccination is at full potency? And then secondly, approximately how long does that full potency last?
Great questions, John. You know, we basically gradually develop immunity after getting the vaccine over about a two-week period. So I think most of us are comfortable saying that at around 2 weeks, I'd say you're at your maximum protection. There is certainly some protection that evolves over that first week and into that second week, but we basically say between 1 and 2 weeks, you're really at that sort of maximum protection. And then the duration of immunity is really interesting, and there's a lot of different ways that people study these things. You know, one way is to actually just look at the level of antibodies in your bloodstream that your immune system has developed. And we know that those actually persist out beyond a year for most people. How long those actually are powerful enough to truly protect you is different in different populations. But they certainly, you know, you can get the vaccine in August, and in most circumstances, people are still well protected at the end of the flu season out in May and June. And there is even evidence, especially in kids, that may carry over even into the beginning of the next flu season. So there's certainly no concerns, I think, in most of our minds now that we've got better science around this, that it's ever too early to vaccinate. So it's almost, you know, like voting in Chicago, early and often.
Yeah, there we go.
So there's really, I think there's no reason to not immunize as soon as vaccine's available. And I think it has made things easier for a lot of the practices, especially around back to school time, as we've been trying to get the manufacturers to get vaccines out and available for us in August and September so we can get the ball rolling and get people immunized and protected before flu starts showing up in the communities.
Yeah. Thanks, John, for calling. Mark in Bayside, your turn. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And you probably addressed this a little bit already, but I remember reading that older folks like myself don't respond as well, at least with antibodies, and possibly in terms of clinical response to the vaccine, and that although they're the ones who need it the most, they're the ones who seem to benefit the least. It's these newer vaccines with the increased potency that mitigate that problem.
Yeah, it's an interesting comment, and I'm glad you raised it. You know, it is one of those things that's difficult to sometimes manage, because you're right that there is less of an immune response to the standard vaccine for most of the older population, and depending on which studies you look at and which year, you know, the response rate and the protection can be as low as, you know, 20 to 30% in some years. The people have sort of mistakenly extrapolated from that and thought that that means that they should wait until getting vaccinated, that lower response means that it may not be as durable a response. But it's really, if you're going to be a person that responds, your response then will still carry you through the season. But it is a matter of sort of getting that immune system up and running. And so these higher potency vaccines basically just have more of the parts of the virus, or what we call the antigens, to try to stimulate the immune system to get more of those people to bump up over that level that would be considered protective. And they really do seem to be more effective at protecting people against disease. You know, they're probably 25 or 30% better in some of the early studies that are coming out at protecting that population. It's still not perfect. And I think we all have to acknowledge that all those other protection things that we need to do for ourselves with avoiding sick people and washing hands and all those things are also really important. But we do still hope that there are new products that will come along eventually that will even be better at promoting better immunity for those populations that we really worry about as being the most vulnerable. So yeah, it's a great point, and I'm glad you brought it up again.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. And Nancy, thanks for calling from Milwaukee.
Well, my question actually was very similar. In fact, it is the exact question. my doctor last year seemed loath to have me have this four times the amount of flu shot, because she said if I have always received an adequate protection in for many decades ever since flu shots have been available, then I perhaps would be better just taking the regular kind, and I am 82 years old.
Good for you, and more power to you. I think that one of the things people need to recognize is that those high dose or high potency vaccines do come with a slightly increased risk of side effects. So that there is a little bit more pain, there is a little bit more swelling in some people, and so there are providers who are less adamant about using that particular vaccine because they are a little hesitant about the side effect component to that. The other is, you know, that many of the vaccines have actually become what we call quadrivalent vaccines. So they have both of the major A strains that are going to circulate and both of the major B strains. The high potency vaccine is still a trivalent vaccine, which is sort of the older model of the vaccine, and only has two of the A strains and one of the B strains. And so there is sort of a trade-off at that point where you have to sort of balance, would I rather get protection against all four of the strains that might circulate, or do I want to get a little bit higher antibody levels against the three strains that are in the high potency one? And so there is some trade-off, and that's one of the reasons that CDC and the other major recommending bodies haven't come down yet on saying that the high-potency vaccine is the absolute preferred vaccine for the older population. It's basically one of those products that is out there and is available and is certainly something that we think, you know, has a lot of validity and a lot of utility in certain members of the population, but there is some trade-off. Now, the difference when we think about these different products is that intranasal live attenuated mist version of the nasal vaccine that I was talking about for children has been determined to be slightly more protective than the injectable vaccine. And so this year, for the first year, 2 to 8 year old children are recommended that that's actually the preferred vaccine. I would say that at some point in the future, that high potency vaccine for the elderly, the population over 65, might ultimately end up being something that is a preferential vaccine. But right now, it's just one of that group of vaccines that we have available, and I think everybody needs to have those discussions with their providers.
Yeah, for sure. Nancy, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Do you get your annual flu shot? Why or why not? And maybe have you had the flu? How severe was it? So there's lots of things that we can talk about with our guest today, Dr. James Conway, who teaches at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the pediatrics division. Always great to have him come by and visit with us. I really appreciate it. We are there symptoms? You know, how do we know if it's the flu or if it's something else?
That's a really good question, Larry. I mean, I think the problem is that there's so many other respiratory viruses that circulate the same time of year. And I think it is important for people to start to recognize some of the more typical symptoms. So I think, you know, when you get a cold in the winter, you know, it's usually a lot of runny nose, congestion. Usually most cold-type illnesses don't really come along with a lot of fever, and they certainly don't come along with the body aches that we see with influenza. But you're right, they can be a little bit hard to distinguish. And the reason it's important to distinguish is that there actually is treatment available for patients that have influenza infections. There are antiviral medications. And so we do try to encourage people to at least think about seeking medical attention when they've got one of those respiratory viruses and just feel that kind of severe headache and achiness or having real fevers. That may be a clue that there's actually a real influenza as opposed to one of the other respiratory viruses.
And if we come down with it, how long is it? I can't remember. I was in such a daze when I had it. I don't remember how long it lasted. And how long are we contagious if we have the flu?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, my grandmother used to say all illnesses are 3 days coming, 3 days there, and 3 days going. Mm-hmm. And I sort of used to laugh at that. But it actually is a pretty good estimate of these kinds of things. You know, we usually talk about influenza being, in most people, about a 5 to 7 day illness. But certainly people can still feel pretty crummy out to about 10 days. Most of the contagiousness and most of the infectiousness to others is in the midst of that actual illness. There is a little bit of shedding of virus that happens before people really come down with their true clinical illness, and that's one of the reasons it's such a hard disease to control once it gets into a community, is that people actually can be a little contagious before they have full-blown symptoms. And then as they gradually recover, they also gradually stop shedding as much virus. So that's one of the reasons that, you know, for people that choose not to get the vaccine, or for the unlucky few that still get the flu even though they've gotten the vaccine, we really do try to encourage people to stay out of public places, stay out of school, and stay out of work, partially so that they can feel better and recover quickly, but partially so we can prevent spread of these things much further than they need to go.
Yeah. Dave in Milwaukee has a question for you. Dave, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I'm 62 years old, and I'm a stage 4 prostate cancer patient. And my cancer has been suppressed for about the last 3 years, but it's in my lymph nodes, in my abdominal area, and I'm just wondering what the doctor would recommend for me.
Yeah, so you're a good candidate, you know, depending on what your current treatment is. And by the way, I wish you all the luck, and we'll, you know, I'll say a quiet prayer for you to do well with all this. You know, depending on what kind of treatment you're on, some of the treatments that go along with these cancers do suppress your immune system a little bit. And so you are at least at some increased risk of having a more severe version of flu if you actually got the flu. You would not be considered a candidate for the live viral vaccine, the intranasal one. That one's actually only approved up to age 49. And since it's a live vaccine, we do avoid putting that into people whose immune systems may not be completely up to snuff. So you would be a great candidate for one of the injectable vaccines. And at your age, at age 62, you said, you'd be probably in good place to get a quadrivalent injectable vaccine that would cover against all four types. But you're a little too young, which you'll be happy to hear probably.
Thank you.
You're too young at this age to get the high potency vaccine, which is approved in people 65 and above. So you got a couple of years until you're a candidate for that one.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck again with your cancer treatments. Jane in Eau Claire, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I'm sorry if you've addressed this already, but I have been wondering about this for 2 years. We have always advocated our children to get flu shots, and they've had flu shots their whole life, and now they're in their 30s, and they've always been getting flu shots. 2 years ago, my two adult children, who are teachers, went into the clinic hospital here, and about 7 hours later, they both had severe allergy reactions. Their tongue started to swell up, their lips, and they went into the emergency room, and they were, you know, treated for this. My one child daughter, it took her over a week to get over some of the severe reaction she received. Mm. But the other one seemed to be better within 24 hours. Now, here they are, teachers with 130 students every day, and they are afraid to get the shot now. And
What should she tell them?
Yeah, understandable. I mean, they are in a high-risk situation, but I certainly can understand being scared a little after that kind of event. You know, it's an unusual time period to have an allergy reaction to a vaccine. Most of the allergic reactions that we worry about happen within the first few hours after receiving a vaccine. And when we talk about anaphylaxis, which is really, you know, sort of the most serious version of an allergic reaction, they tend to really occur in a very short period of time after getting the vaccine. 7 to 8 hours is a little funny, and, you know, some of the times when those things happen, it seems that it's actually a coincidental thing, that they're actually reacting to something else, some food item that they ate later in the day or something like that. Those are the types of people, I think, that really would be well served by actually getting in and seeing a real allergist and maybe getting either some skin testing, or there's other versions of testing they can do to try to sort out whether it was genuinely an allergic reaction to the vaccine or whether it was a coincidental thing. Because you're right. I mean, I think it would be unfortunate if they sort of have just been sort of put into a place where they're so afraid of the vaccine that they don't get the opportunity to protect themselves.
Yeah.
So I think they would really be well served by trying to see if they could get in with a local allergist and look at either some skin testing, and there's blood versions of those things, a number of different ways you can look and see what it is that they might really be allergic to.
I think that's really great advice. Good luck, Jane. Thank you very much for calling. Margaret in Oshkosh. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is this. I'm 79 years old, have had rheumatoid arthritis for many years, and take methotrexate and Plaquenil for it. Supposedly, my immune system is suppressed somewhat, and I'm wondering about the wisdom of taking that new, stronger or a vaccine this year. I've never had any problems with the vaccines in the years past.
Good question, and you know, you certainly are at more risk of having severe flu if you got it, and I commend you for, you know, making sure that you get your flu vaccine each year. What I would suggest is that you actually talk to your talk to your rheumatologist. There are occasional rheumatologic conditions that people do worry could be exacerbated, could be set off a little bit by the immune reactions to some of these vaccines. So I would run it by them. My guess is that if you're doing as well as it sounds like you are and are stable, that they would be comfortable with you getting a little bit higher potency vaccine to get a little bit more oomph for your immune system to really be well protected. But I think in those kinds of circumstances where your underlying problem is actually an autoimmune disease where your immune system is a little too active, just make sure that they're comfortable. And if they've been comfortable with you getting annual flu vaccines and hopefully have recommended them to you each year, my suspicion is that they'll be okay with it, but I would always recommend running it by your actual provider to make sure your circumstances would fit that recommendation.
There you go, Margaret. Thank you very much for calling. And Stefan and Madison, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
I'm from Europe, and I'm surprised every year about the huge campaign here in the U.S. for the flu shot. And I'm wondering about the science behind this, the evidence for its need.
All right. So what have you got for us, Dr. Conway?
Interesting question, Stefan. And I'm curious where you're from. Where in Europe are you from?
I'm from Germany.
Okay. Germany, okay.
So, I mean, the evidence is actually fairly sound. We're fortunate that the Centers for Disease Control really collects data from all the states and has been doing that for decades. You know, we know that on an average year there are, you know, probably on the order of between 20 and 35,000 deaths every year that are attributed to influenza. We know that the healthcare utilization related to medically attended illness related to influenza is on the order of, you know, hundreds of thousands of cases, and in some years even millions of cases. And when, you know, we've really sort of looked at the costs and benefits of these things, the relatively modest cost of influenza vaccines and the risks, especially in high risk populations, of complicated disease, and both the cost of that to the system, but also the real discomfort and, in some cases, you know, morbidity and mortality to the individual, have really come out with the cost of the vaccine really being well worth the benefits of administering those broadly. And in fact, we've actually, as I mentioned earlier, sort of marched through from a policy standpoint, initially just focusing on those highest risk populations, but have moved more and more even into the healthy populations, partially because we're also trying to protect those individuals in our communities who either don't have full response to the vaccine and are still susceptible, or are in one of those circumstances where they can't be vaccinated. So there are people out there that have true allergies or have other contraindications to being vaccinated. And so one of the ways we do as a society here try to protect them is actually to make sure we get enough herd immunity so that these viruses don't circulate as broadly as they otherwise could. I think the European Union has been gradually moving, I think, towards trying to do this more broadly. It's an expensive prospect. There's no question about it, to try to make sure that we have enough vaccine and can provide it to everybody. And to be honest, the manufacturers don't make enough. I mean, if every American actually lined up and wanted vaccine, you know, we unfortunately don't have even enough to provide it. But I think that we all dream of the day at some point where this really becomes a routine thing worldwide. There is certainly still plenty of influenza disease that happens in other countries, and a lot of medically attended and fairly expensive care that's associated with those. So from a public health standpoint, as well as an individual standpoint, we really do see that there is plenty of epidemiology and scientific evidence to support this.
So get your shot. Dr. Conway, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Larry. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, Dr. James Conway teaches at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And as he said, you know, hey, it's flu season. Get your flu shot. And, I mean, he talked about one or two circumstances where you might not. But for most of us, 99.99%, it sounds like we should be getting a flu shot. And I'm certainly going to get mine. Preventive medicine, you know, it's come a long way, done a lot to keep us healthy and minimize the spread of horrible diseases. Coming up next, we're going to talk about a different aspect of healthcare with Dr. Toby Campbell. He's committed to help patients and their families make difficult end-of-life decisions in a way that brings peace in a real difficult time. I hope you'll stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.